Welcome back to the Cozy Cozy Podcast. I'm your host, Garrett Kuzmeyers, and whether you're trying to conceive in the middle of a pregnancy, one day or 1 year postpartum, we are here to provide comfort and community for the entire perinatal journey. From birth stories of moms just like you and I, to my solo musings on the throes of motherhood and business, to powerhouse mamas making real change, we are here to support you so you can take out your AirPods, feel less alone, and more empowered to take on the day. Wherever you are, let's get cozy. Welcome back to the Cozy Cozy Podcast. I sincerely apologize for my voice, but you guys know me. In 6+ years of doing this, I don't miss a beat, and I'm excited about this episode, and I really, really wanted to record the intro closer to the drop. I was very fortunate to record today's episode about just a little bit less than a month ago, and I'm so grateful to have been able to sit down with today's guest. But before we get into it, I really want to get into kind of the updates of Cozy Cozy, where we are in space and time, and all the things in my life as I am the common through line on this podcast. If you didn't tune into last week's solo cast, I made an episode called Mucinex for Fertility, and ironically, I sound like I could use some Mucinex right now. I promise I'll make this intro short, but things have been popping off for me on TikTok, and I am very grateful, and it's all because of this very arduous fertility journey that I have had. And while I am grateful that I still have my health and I am still in progress with it, but I'm so grateful to have had the support from community like TikTok and here at the Cozy Cozy Podcast, and also to be learning so much on TikTok. It is truly a place of knowledge, and I wouldn't have known about Mucinex otherwise, and I'm excited to try that this month. Our update on Cozy Cozy is that we have a new batch of nip cloths coming this summer. We're really excited about it because this batch will be eligible to get the certified organic label. And it's funny, it's like the chicken or the egg, because you have to like order the tubes and then make the product and then submit it to a registered agent. It's like this whole long process. So it won't be on the actual tube, but it will be on our website. So very excited to be in process with all of that. If you are not following at Cozy Cozy Mama on TikTok, I truly hope that you do, because it's really where I'm spending most of my time instead of Instagram these days. But without further ado, let's get into today's amazing guest, Erin Breyer. Erin Breyer is a professional doula of Erin Breyer Birthing. You might be familiar with her at ebbirthing.com. She is an Indiana girl, which I love because I am from Indiana, and I actually ran a nip gloss over to my old childhood neighbor. She was visiting her parents. I was like, hey, I know you're not breastfeeding anymore, but can you like snag this nip gloss? Can you like tell people about it? And she told Erin, and now how fortunate am I that I got to sit down with Erin Breyer, who is an amazing doula, childbirth educator, and author supporting families since 2017. She went to IU, which I almost went there. We could have been there at the same time. She majored in human development and family studies, and that laid the foundation for her rewarding career as a doula, childbirth educator, and author. I'm so excited for you guys to like kind of walk through some of my traumatic birth with Erin. I kind of pulled out some threads from that to talk about like why doula support is so imperative, and also why I didn't feel like I could really stick up for myself during birth. And there's a really fun fact about your state of your brain when you are going through labor that she shares. So stay tuned for that. And we also talked about virtual doulaship, which is a current, very hot topic. And Erin has a lot of, you know, thoughts and resources on that. So very excited for you guys to hear all about Erin, her own birth story, her experience as a doula, her thoughts on doulaship, and really just if you want to get hyped about birth, you're going to love this episode. So I love the quote I have to mention on her website. It says, life is only as good as the people you get to share it with. And I just feel like that's such a perfect quote for a doula to have, because when you bring a doula into your birth, you are bringing them into such an incredibly sacred experience. And Erin truly embodies the sacredness of it. And she is so, She's just so present to the magic that is giving birth. And she is incredibly, incredibly smart. And I am so grateful to have met her and to have been able to have her on the podcast. So you can find Erin at EB Birthing on Instagram, her website, ebbirthing.com. And she is sharing all about the entire spectrum of the perinatal journey on Instagram right now, from pregnancy to loss, miscarriage, to birth, to postpartum, and I hope you'll follow along there. One more thing before we jump into it. You guys can find a code THANKYOU20 in the show notes for 20% off of Nip Gloss. It is our only product on the market. If you guys have been following the podcast for a long time, you know that I set off to invent the world's first absorbent disposable bra in 2022, and I thought it would be done a long time ago, and we're getting closer. I say that every episode, but someday this will be a distant memory. And in the meantime, our amazing Nip Gloss is a nipple and lip balm. You can use it on your chapped nipples if you're new to breastfeeding, and your lips. And the cap pops off with one hand. We have an amazing ceramic applicator that is very cooling to the nipples, and it's completely mess-free. So no more dunking your finger in a jar, unscrewing the jar, wiping your finger on a burp cloth or whatever you can access while holding baby. It's just mess-free, stress-free. The tube is made of PLA plastic, which is like a cornstarch, and it takes less energy from the environment to make. And it's in a cosmetic box that's Forestry Stewardship Council certified. So a very conscious product. It's non-toxic. It's all natural, made with 70% organic ingredients. And we're so excited to bring that out into the world. So grab that for your friends. Bring it to a baby shower. Bring it to a friend that's postpartum, because it's also just pretty. And I feel like there's very few pretty postpartum things. So anyway, without further ado, I'm very excited and grateful for the conversation I shared with Erin Breyer of EB Birthing. So let's get into it. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to dive in. I am someone who had a doula in my birth, and she is amazing, and everything went wrong. So I'm going to have to do a little debriefing today. But before we dive into it, I'll ask you the question we're asking everyone this season, which is, who are you, before labels, titles, or what someone could Google about you?
It's such a good question. And it really kind of takes some soul searching to figure that out, because it's not anything I think about on the daily basis. We're so, as a society, like, hung up on those titles, which, you know, can be great. But I really think at the core of it, I am just a people person. I love being around people. I love connecting with people. I love learning from people. I love dissecting dynamics of relationships and families, and just really am lit up by meeting and being around other people and different people than myself. I think that is something that really gives me a lot of great perspective, is even in motherhood, I'm not the type of mom that's like, I'm going to necessarily read all the books, dive into the Google rabbit holes. I'm like, let me talk to other moms who have been through this. And I just love getting other people's point of views. And it really helps me kind of just formulate, okay, was my initial thought process, like, do I still feel good with that? Do I need to kind of change the way I think? And I just feel like people are at the core of everything, you know? And so I'm a people person. That's what I've decided it is.
I love this answer. And I think it makes a lot of sense for a doula as well, because you are like someone's person. Like, I will never forget having, so the cliff notes of my birth was that my epidural didn't work. And after I had labored for over 24 hours. And so I was like looking for that reprieve, didn't get it. And then I had read that that transition from 8 to 10 centimeters is like the most painful part. And I felt it, and I thought I was dying. I didn't know that I had an infection. No one had told me, even though I
very clearly did and was on antibiotics. For some reason, no one wanted to tell me that. So my transition was just painful for many reasons, but I actually called out for my mom. Like they say, you kind of call out for your mom when you think you're dying. And my doula was right there. And I remember, and she's a mom of seven, and she just has like a very motherly instinct. And again, so grateful for her, but you have to really be someone that can, I mean, you have to be a people person. It's all about that connection that you can make with somebody. And so I love that answer. And I do want to unpack a little bit about kind of my experience and birth during this podcast. But offline, we were talking about this idea of virtual doula care. And I had read the Maven Clinic article about it. And I would love to know your thoughts, because I had a doula, and you know, it didn't, my birth was just didn't go right for many reasons, which we'll get to, but I would love to know your thoughts on that and kind of more on the article and your perspective.
Yeah. So that article, I feel like for me in my local doula community, at least, I'm kind of shocked that more people aren't talking about it, because the findings in that study in the article was just, and I'm not surprised to hear it, but virtual doulas have a lot of the same impact on positive birth outcomes and the families who are experiencing birth that in-person doula support does. And that includes like more feelings of like confidence and preparation and feeling good about making kind of those medical decisions and just knowing how they want their birth to unfold, or at least feeling knowledgeable about what may occur and how to make those decisions in real time. And even down to like less NICU admissions, it's like 20% less NICU admissions and lower cesarean rates. And again, not super surprised to hear that, because so much of what I do as a doula, even as an in-person there with you doula, so much of my work is really on the front end in that education piece. And just like you said, building relationship leading into the birth, so much of that happens before we're even in the birthing space. So that is really the foundation that sets you up for that birth experience and being able to feel prepared in the moment. Now, just kind of like what you're alluding to with your experience, things can go a million different ways and you can never truly be fully prepared until you're in the situation, because you just don't know. But I think with virtual doula services, I think we're going to see a little bit of a trend with that becoming more popular, because there are a lot of people who, understandably so, and I say this as a doula, your birth space is sacred and you should only invite people into that birth space that you really feel comfortable with. And that goes for support people like doulas too. So I think this is really going to have a really positive impact on those people who really want to keep that space private and don't necessarily feel super comfortable with bringing in a doula or a third party kind of person, but they can have that real-time support of, you know, here's what's happening in the moment and talking through that. And I am going to start dabbling in that now in my own practice. And I'm so excited. I have a couple clients already. Wow. And you know, even as clients that I had last year who I was there with them in their birth, I had one specific family who it just kind of shook out that a lot of the support I gave them was virtual leading into it. And by the time they were ready for me to come join them, we were pushing. And so that really gave me, I mean, it was shortly after that Maven Clinic article came out, and that really kind of connected some dots and got the wheels turning of like, this is really doable and makes a lot of sense for a lot of people. So I'm really, again, not surprised, but excited for this kind of new avenue of support that families can get.
Yeah, it's I think for anyone listening that hasn't had a doula, has maybe never even heard the term doula, it would be really interesting to kind of go into your why for it, because the understand, like, I think it also will help people understand why even virtual care is helpful as well. One interesting thing about my experience with the hospital's system was it was 2020, early 2021, mm-hmm. and COVID era was still going strong. They were letting partners be in the room at that point. But what was strange and interesting to me was because I requested that my doula come to my birth and they said no, I had to fight for it. Mm-hmm. And they typecast me as being a crunchy granola person. Mm-hmm. And I was lectured by a doctor who they make you see everyone in the practice. So I had never met this doctor. She walked in, had read that I was getting this quote unquote special approval for a doula. And she goes into a lecture on why I should be prepared to get an epidural without asking me my plan, mm-hmm. just because she had cast me as I must obviously be trying for a natural birth because I have this doula and I'm not going to listen to her. And it was so interesting. So my first question back to her was, well, would you like to know about my birth plan? And mm-hmm. in that moment, I'm like, this is why I'm yeah. going to have a doula, because I may deliver with a doctor I've never met. Yeah. And you, like you've said, a lot of the work of the doula is throughout the pregnancy leading up so that you are informed. So I guess to break down my question more simply, did you always know you wanted to be a doula? How did you know? And then a follow-on question, which I'll remind you so you don't have to remember this part, is I'm just so curious what it was like to birth as a doula.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I could unpack that forever, but I'll get to the first part. So yeah. I would say yes and no about knowing that I always wanted to be a doula. So, you know, you go through school and you kind of get towards college and you're supposed to just like know a direction you're going to take. And for me, I thought, without knowing anything, as of course a high schooler, I thought that maybe I wanted to go into psychology. And so my thought process around what I did always want to do was help people, which is very broad, right? It's like kind of going back to that people person, love interacting with people. I also, just growing up and even still now, have always been that person in my friend group that people come to just unload on. I love being that person. I love being able to provide that safe space and then give feedback if it's requested. Yeah. And I think part of that too is wanting to always fix something, which, yeah. you know, you got to be careful with sometimes in situations, but I've just always really enjoyed that aspect of building relationships in my own life, of being that person that people feel like they can come and talk to, I can help them get resources, things like that. So in high school, going into college, for some reason, psychology was the answer. And then, you know, throughout college, that transitioned so many different times to maybe social work, which is a little more along the lines of maybe what I was looking for. Okay. And then it turned into human development and family studies was my major. I thought, you know, didn't know what I wanted to do with that, but wanted to maybe do some nonprofit work, which I did for a little bit. But it was in that major in my last semester of college that I took a class that I had like two options for an elective. And it was like folklore, which to be honest, I still don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I picture like wooden clogs, have no idea if that's right. And then the other option was birthing in American society. And I thought, well, this birthing class goes along more with my major. It makes a little more sense. So I chose that. And that's when I learned a lot more about the physiological process of pregnancy and birth and learned what a doula was. And I became really fascinated with it because, I mean, at the end of the day, always my awe in this work is how amazing women's bodies are and how strong and resilient and yet different every single pregnancy, birth, and postpartum experience is. So once I learned that you can support people through this process as a job, that's when I knew I wanted to do it, but it was still probably 6 years out of college before I actually did it. And a big piece of it was that I let hold me back was I have not been through this experience myself, so I can't do this work. And when I finally, my husband and I, before we were married, and we kind of bounced around from before wanting to put our roots down in Indiana and Indianapolis, where we are now, once we finally made that decision, then I was like, okay, now it's time to pursue this. And I kind of just started networking a little bit with doulas in the area. And I had talked to someone who ended up being my trainer for my doula certification. And then I worked with her for a little bit. And I shared with her that I was like, can I be a doula when I've not done this? And she, God bless her for being so passionate, because it really just shifted my whole perspective. And she was like, your uterus does not define you, and you can, you can do this work. It's, and really, even now, as I moved in my career, like into a support role for doulas and mentoring newer doulas, I find myself saying this all the time, like, this work is about building the relationships and supporting people. And you can do that no matter if you've had children or not, or if you ever plan to have children or not. It's about the support and holding that space. And so I was really grateful that she said it in a way that sunk right in and was like, okay, let's do this. And so that was 2016 that I finally went through my certification, and it feels a little wild now to feel, to know that it's going into my 8th year of this and coming up on that decade mark and still loving it. The burnout rate for doulas is like 5 years is the average. And so it's exciting and kind of mind blowing that it's already been that long.
Wow. I didn't know that about the burnout rate. And as historically a fitness instructor, I actually feel like it's similarly a 5-year burnout rate. Like I did it for longer than that. And I know people who have, and at the 5 years, I remember being like, yeah, I don't know how sustainable this is. And because it helping people is so selfless and it takes so much energy. And, you know, and yet a fitness class is an hour. Obviously people teach many a day, but the births are just so intense. Like I think my doula had said that my birth was her hardest birth she's ever been through. But what was it like knowing everything and having supported births and then birthing yourself? Like, were you nervous? Were you like, was knowing so much overwhelming, or was it empowering? What was your mindset like going into your first birth?
Yeah, I think that that is a really unique perspective that I had. And I think I knew that going into it too. And I had a doula with my son, and my husband, you know, had been a doula for 5 years. My husband kept saying, do we really need a doula? Are you sure? And I'm like, listen, yes.
Yeah.
And so I had a really unique perspective in the fact that I had been to so many births. I've seen a million different ways that they can unfold. I've really, when I'm with clients in the birth space, I feel like part of my role in that is truly being in it with them. So yes, to your point of like the potential exhaustion of like really holding that space for who knows how long. But because I had that opportunity for so many years, I felt at ease maybe about birth. A lot of the struggle that I had in my first pregnancy was really in the prenatal period, which is interesting because as a doula, we do support families throughout pregnancy. But I, being in the birth space with them, there's more of like hands-on experience that I had versus not, you know, in pregnancy, it's just like, I check in every once in a while, they can reach out to me with questions and I can get them resources. So a lot of that stuff is a little more surface level, or for me at that time, prior to having my own experience, was a little surface level. So I felt like actually going through that firsthand, it just threw me for a loop. And so I struggled a lot mentally in my first pregnancy. And a lot of that too had to do with the transition into motherhood, because I had really worked hard to become a person and build this life that I really was proud of. And knowing that motherhood just changes things, I was really, really nervous about that. And so for me, in that first experience with my son, pregnancy was really hard. Birth was kind of exactly what I expected it to be,
really?
Which to some extent was like, I expect anything can happen. So I was just very open-minded about it. Yeah. I had a rough birth plan that was like, I want to go unmedicated as long as I want to, whatever that means, because it's, even though I've been in it with so many women, obviously I'm not feeling those sensations. And yeah. So who knows what it actually feels like until you're feeling it. So that was kind of my plan. I really wanted to listen to Beyonce because she just makes me feel empowered. And I wanted to have the option of getting in a tub. That was like my rough birth plan. I was borderline a psycho about requesting this tub throughout triage and like, I want a room with a tub. I want a room with a tub. As soon as we got to the room, they filled up the tub. I did not get in that thing once. I did not listen to Beyonce once. And I remember in between contractions at one point looking up and seeing the tub across the room, like full and just serene and beautiful. And I was just like, nope, not happening. And so there was a lot in my birth that, like, going through it myself, it was really a great and fine experience. And I think that has a lot of credit of knowing and being in so many birth spaces for so many years prior to. But there are also some things that kind of like you experienced with doctors being a little pushy. And the one who ended up delivering my baby was one of my least favorite in the practice. And my mindset, even with that and having a rotation of doctors, was I know how infrequent doctors are in the room. They come in, they catch your baby.
I didn't know that. That was one of my biggest surprises, is when it finally came time to push, which it actually wasn't time. I pushed for like 5 hours before the fetal ejection reflex kicked in. But I was like, well, where's the doctor? I'm not pushing yet. Where's the doctor? They're like, the doctor, why do you need the doctor? And I was like, because I'm pushing. And they're like, you don't need the doctor. Like, the nurses do so much.
Yes. Yes. And I say that, you know, that's one of the things I prepare clients for, is like, yes, I think it's very important to feel like you have a good relationship and rapport with your care provider throughout pregnancy, because you do see only them. You don't see nurses really then, at least not the nurses that you're going to see, you know, for the big show. Yeah. But it's the nurse that is with you. And I really believe a nurse can make or break your labor. And so I talk with my clients about that and how, and you know, it's interesting talking about kind of the virtual support. That's going to be something new for me to kind of figure out how to navigate, because when you're there in the space, my whole role and goal is to feel out the vibes, like constantly just like checking in with everyone's vibes, like as I'm doing other things. So if a nurse comes in and the vibes completely shift, that's really easy for me being there to say, you know, like, how are we feeling? And if we need to, request another nurse. I mean, it's, you really can do that. And so that's going to have to be something new to navigate, not being there and trying to figure out how to ask those kinds of questions of like, what's the vibe like? You know, and you can request another nurse, and here's how you do it, because doulas are great scapegoats for things like that. To me, it's part of our role, is just like vibe check and fixing the environment to whatever aspects we can. And that's one of the ways, is with nurses. But yeah, your nurse is who's with you for the long haul, and your nurse is the person who is going to be reporting back to the doctor. So I think it's really important, yes, to have a nurse that you vibe with, but for me as a doula, to build that rapport and that relationship with that nurse as soon as possible, because they can have a lot of impact on how things unfold and what they're sharing with the doctors and then what the doctors are going to recommend. So it's kind of like a little game of chess of each person has a role and figuring out how to buddy up to the right people. And it sounds very like yucky and political, and I don't mean it that way, but we're part of this team. This is a birth team, and birthing in hospitals, there are players that have different roles. And so nurses are the people for births. Yeah. And I think to your point, a lot of people don't really realize that.
And I focus so much on, well, what doctor do I like here? What doctor? And it's like, you really don't see them for long. And my induction was so long that I actually went through 3 different rotations of nurses by the time my son was born. And they actually each round, I kept thinking, oh, I couldn't love them more. And then I couldn't love them more. And that was the best scenario. Yes. Because everything was, I really didn't like any of the doctors. But I did find it to be interesting that I felt a little bit like so dazed and confused when things started getting pretty rough that I was kind of yapping at the doctors, but I couldn't really have a coherent conversation. But because we had done every intervention from the, I'm forgetting the name of it, but like the cervix softener to the Folly balloon, to breaking my water, to a finger, like manual. It was just, there were so many things and they all were going wrong. I actually think, and not nothing wrong. I mean, none of us knew what to do really, but I feel like my doula almost didn't know how to stand up with the doctors because the doctors were saying at so many points, like, we're not sure what to do. We're not sure what to do. And then she was like, well, what am I supposed to tell her? Yeah. And it was just, it was this experience that I probably still have more to unpack, but like that everyone around was confused.
Yeah.
Everybody, my husband, obviously, my doula, the doctors. And then every time the shifts would change, there'd be a new opinion. And I think the only reason that I didn't end up in a C-section was the doctor said, you have 15 minutes to get this baby out after 4.5 hours of pushing. And he got tied up in another surgery. So it gave us actually like 40 minutes. And then the fetal ejection reflex kicked in. But I didn't even know what that was. I actually opened my phone once I kind of came to 2 days later. And the first thing that popped up was a doula that I followed online that posted about the fetal ejection reflex. And I'm reading about it. And like, that just happened to me. Yeah. And again, I had done a lot of education. I felt like I knew a lot. I clearly didn't, but having kind of knowing all those options, seeing so many different iterations of birth, having the open mind that you did you find birth to be magical, blissful, amazing? Or did you find it to be hard? Like, kind of, what was your first takeaway?
That's something I feel like I still am kind of trying to unpack and have been. I mean, my child is almost 3 now, also had him in 2021. And, you know, truthfully, overall, the experience was fine. And there were some things that were a little annoying, but for the most part, like I said, it went smooth. And I was really, really fortunate in the fact that this almost never happens. I mean, I would maybe even say being a doula who supported so many births, few times did I see kind of where your labor just goes on like the curve, the perfect curve. And really for me, it was like once things started, they just kept going. So I didn't have to deal with any stalling. And that's part of why I never ended up opting for an epidural. And I had, it was in the back of my head, but it was like, to your kind of point that you said earlier, you can't really get a coherent thought out. So when you're in labor and things pick up, your brain waves actually slow. Right. And so you can really, I mean, you're super sensitive. All your senses are like high alert. And so you can hear everything going on. You understand what's going on, but to like react and like speak back, it's just almost close to impossible. And so that's kind of where I was at as well, was like, all I can do is get through the next contraction. And in between, it's like getting that second of recovery before it comes again. So I didn't really have I mean, looking back, luckily I didn't really have the chance to change the plan up. And so again, like it was a fine experience, but I always, at the end of births with clients, no matter how they deliver, I always am like at the bedside, I'm like, do you feel like a badass? Because like, it's like you just did something so amazing.
Yeah.
And I never really had that feeling. I mean, even now, like I don't think, oh my gosh, super blissful. Like it was hard. It was, I mean, of course, and I expected that. And so I'm not surprised by that by any means, but I don't really have a good like word to sum it up. It was fine. I mean, I hate even saying that because it feels so underwhelming, because really nothing about it was traumatic or anything like overly negative, but I never had those feelings of like, oh my gosh. And I think a lot of that was maybe because of the mindset struggles I had around motherhood. And so once I was done, it was just like, okay, now I'm a mom.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of the work on kind of the front end of coming to terms and all of that. I mean, that is part of birth that I think a lot of people don't prepare for, that aspect of like the mental stuff. You got to deal with that to the best of your abilities. And so I think that was part of maybe that, like, maybe overshadowed a little bit. Like I wasn't immediately attached to my son. It wasn't until like maybe the morning of the day we were being discharged that I was like, oh my gosh, like a little spark of, oh my gosh. And yeah, the rest of like, you know, pushing him out, like yeah, on my chest, he was fine, all of that stuff. But I, even in those moments, I was just like exhausted, like, oh, I'm done. He's out. This doctor's done. Like shouting at me. And like it wasn't like the euphoria that I see so many people experience. And I think that's important to just talk about in general. And I guess I haven't really talked about it all that much because it's not a typical question that you ask about someone's birth story. But I think it's important to note, just because I'm not alone in that. I know that there are other people who aren't instantly attached to their babies and probably feel really guilty about it. And for me, I didn't have a lot of a guilt attached to it, but it was just like going through the motions a little bit until I had that moment of a little bit of spark, like holy crap, like he's a baby and he's here and he's mine. And then it's just like, boom, in the thick of postpartum. So like, obviously, eventually, you know, we had the bonding moments and all of that. And I am so grateful for my experience, even in motherhood, as it's been so far, knowing what my expectations were. But I think it did overshadow a little bit the birth itself. And maybe that's why I don't have the words yet for it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I love that answer. And I think one thing that I come back to a lot, just looking at the challenges in the medical system, the way we've over kind of medicalized birth. I mean, I'm very grateful for the interventions that do exist for the right situations. But I mean, for thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, women have given birth, and it's this thing that our bodies can do. And I think there's a little bit of that natural aspect that's been lost for probably so many reasons. And so I think the fact that aside from not having necessarily the perfect words for it, but like this sense of neutrality is also like, I think that's heroic and also so honorary, in the sense that like you did do it, and you did it in the same way that hundreds of thousands of women, if not millions, have done it for generations, without any, you know, massive I don't know, like, to do about it, I guess. Like, yeah, it was like, oh, yeah, they're all giving birth, and like that's what's happening, and they probably did it seven more times, and it's just this like circle of life. And I also think your point about the transition to motherhood. I had a spiritual mentor for like 2.5 years leading up to my birth. like life coach, kind of spiritual mentor. And she kept telling me during my pregnancy, she's like, you're not acting like you're pregnant. Like, this is going to be very confronting if you don't deal with this now. And I was so grateful for that because, like you said, a lot of women don't deal with it till after. And I think that that makes postpartum even harder. We talk about this a lot on the podcast, but when we're in chemical shifts, right? Like all the chemical shifts that happen postpartum, our brain wants content to make sense of it, right? And I was so lucky that I remember being on the bathroom floor crying, and I didn't have to say, oh, it's because I'm mad at my husband, or it's because I didn't bottle my baby. It was literally just like, this is the hormonal roller coaster. And I'm a postpartum stereotype right now. And I'm crying because I know that my chemicals are imbalanced because that's part of this. And I didn't have anything I had to make meaning about it because of the processing I had done. And I think that that's such a important part to consider because a lot of people don't take the time for it. And so much of your first pregnancy is about the nursery and the registry and you're glowing. And then all of a sudden it's like about the baby and there's so many shifts there. But I do also want to just bring attention to something else you said that I've never heard anyone explain, which was the notion that your brain waves are slowing down. It makes so much sense because I did not realize that at all. But to your point, I'm like, I do remember doctors in the corner whispering about this. And I remember this thing happening and this thing happening, but I really was not able to articulate my thoughts. And I think that that also brings us back to having a doula and having that person that does really know you, because if you're going to move through several shifts of nurses and different doctors, that one solid person, which obviously your partner could be that, but they're not informed on the options. And I do think that, so when you think of virtual care, are you, I'm kind of picturing like, you know, my husband being kind of the medium to text what's going on. Is that kind of how you see it going?
Yeah. And, you know, typically with birth now, or I should say in-person birth services, as I've provided for years, there's always at some point a passing of the torch to the partner or the husband. That's like, he's the one who I end up communicating with once they're in the hospital and whenever they're ready for me to be there. So there's always a really natural passing of the torch in that way. So I expect it to be that way similarly in the postpartum, in the virtual aspect of this, I think there'll be a little more work on my end of touching base more frequently because typically now, or for in-person services, I am very constantly in contact once, you know, this is labor, like these are what my contractions are doing, or this is the plan for the induction or whatever that initial kind of starting of labor looks like. And there's a lot of little education along the way and, you know, here's a good time to call your doctor, or if it is, an induction, it's here's what you can expect with this. And here's what they might recommend next, kind of helping them prepare for that aspect of things. And so usually once they're at the hospital and they're settled, if they are not ready for me to be there, I really give them their space. I might check in every once in a while, especially if it's overnight. I mean, the goal is to rest. But I really wait for them to kind of reach out to me unless it's been a while since I've heard from them. I think in this virtual care is going to be a little more intentional and crafty about what I ask when to really try to get a full picture. Because your point of having your husband be there as the constant, and they absolutely are, you don't know what you don't know. They're not informed necessarily, like you mentioned. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of, more digging a little bit to try to get a full picture of what's going on so I can know what I can recommend and how I can support. And I think some of that, and same holds true for in-person services before I'm with them physically, and even really when I'm with them sometimes, a lot of my support, like I have to follow their lead. Like if they are not overly communicative, if they are totally okay with just going with whatever the doctor recommends next, I mean, I can still interject with information and helping inform them. But my role as a doula is not to make your birth be how I think it should be. So there's a lot of that relationship building and a lot of even the vibe checking before we're in the room of like, I let my clients kind of set the tone for how they want to be supported. And it's not always, I want all the information. I want to know every little thing. Sometimes it's my doctor said this, I really like, that sounds good to us. And I say, all right, you know, it's not my job to change your mind or to argue with you, to give you some facts or, you know, some education, absolutely. But it's the same. I mean, I think so much with the idea of this virtual care, so much is going to be the same. And that's what I'm really excited about. And that's why I'm not surprised to hear that there's that many differences in outcomes, because so much of what we do as in-person work is so similar to what we would be doing virtual. And there will be people for sure that virtual services are not right for. They might, you know, if they're planning an unmedicated birth, they probably are going to want a lot of physical support, as they should. And husbands definitely can give that if they are informed. And so, you know, I think it, like I said, it's going to be like a new subset of people who are going to really find benefit from this virtual service. And then there's, of course, going to be people who really want that in person. And when I'm able to, I'm excited to get back to that. But at the same time, going back to that burnout rate, it's going to be a nice option for the profession of doula work as well, to prevent some of that burnout, because it takes a lot of energy to hold that space in throughout a birth.
I can't imagine. Like, our birth was almost 4 days. Like, on Monday, he was born Thursday. Like, my doula was just like, that was like, she looked shell shocked. And it's just, I can't imagine. And then, you know, the whole energetic journey that you go through, even just minute to minute, it's gotta be, it's wild, and it's not for the faint of heart. But I'm curious, you know, seeing all different types of births, I'm sure you've seen home births, hospital births, birth centers, it's a two-part question. Anything, or I guess I'll ask the first one. What is like the most common challenge people want support, or like the most common, like, challenging part of birth, regardless of where it is that you see either most people struggle with or have questions about, that maybe the audience would be surprised to hear?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think a big consistent piece is those last weeks of pregnancy, and leading into labor starting on its own versus being enticed by induction and this ARRIVE trial, which is a study that came out in 2018 that kind of essentially said that for a low risk pregnancy, 39 week induction doesn't have worse outcomes for mom or baby than labor starting on its own. So doctors love that. And that is a common theme that I am seeing. I mean, it is something that I am quick to talk about with clients. And again, kind of like I was saying earlier, they want that 39 week induction. Then my job is to support them and educate them through what that is going to look like. But I think that whether the client is open to induction or they really want things to start on their own, I think that is a common theme of those last weeks of pregnancy, of what is actually an option that sometimes isn't phrased that sounds like it's an option, as far as cervical exams and then this induction, or we're going to go ahead and get this induction scheduled, or those kinds of things. So I think that's pretty consistent in an area of education that I've really leaned into, seeing a need to really lean into that. And then throughout labor itself, and I think, again, consistently across the board, no matter how clients decide they want to labor, whether it's medicated, unmedicated, if they're open to cesarean or whatever that looks like for them, a lot of it is the in-the-moment kind of interjections and filling gaps as far as when options are presented to them, and being able to kind of provide that space of a balance between the education and the space, but while doing that cohesively in a team aspect with medical staff. Yeah. So that is something that I think takes real grace and delicate talent to be able to really show up and advocate for your client and what they need and what you're feeling that yeah. would be best for them based on what you know about their wishes and how things are unfolding, but also respecting the recommendations of the staff. And a lot of that is just creating space of getting the information and the recommendation from the staff, letting the client, the family, and the medical team have that conversation. And then I just kind of jump in and say, you don't have to decide right now. You can have a couple minutes to think about it. And then usually that invites the staff to kind of step out. Gotcha. And then if I need to kind of go in with a little more direct information that don't want to step on any medical provider's toes because they have way more medical education than me. Like I have the experience in the birth room and can speak to a lot of these things based on education and experience, but they are the medical professional. And so I believe scope of practice and what they say is to be respected, but I think sometimes you can rephrase or put it in a different perspective that is going to better suit your client. So I see that being a big part of what I do in the labor room.
It makes so much sense. And I think hopefully people who haven't been in a labor room or are pregnant or thinking about it have a much better understanding too of why the support is so critical. Because, and even going back to, again, the fact that your brain is in literal different state, you're in a different state of mind. It's hard to think on your feet and be as self-assured as you are when you're not in labor. I guess my kind of one of my final questions, I wish we had, 2 hours for this, is what differences you notice generally speaking between at home versus hospital births. It's actually my sister-in-law was really excited to go to a natural birthing center. It's actually in Indy. And I knew someone who had just like a magical birth there that she loved, but things did not go well. And in my sister-in-law's case, she ended up in the hospital. And I know that sometimes that happens. I have a friend here in New Hampshire who had a C-section, and throughout her second pregnancy, they were kind of like trying to inch her towards planning for a second C-section. And she's like, nope, I want a VBAC. And they're like, you're crazy. She left in tears. And then she ended up finding a midwife and having like an amazing blissful birth at home. So it's like all different iterations of this are possible, but I'm just curious based on the births that you've attended, if you see any stark contrast between the two or any major differences that people might want to consider between the two options.
Yeah, I think kind of like you mentioned earlier, as far as interventions go, same is holds true for the options that we have for where we give birth. I think that is a beautiful thing. And I think every person is going to feel differently about those options. Pros on one, to one person may not be pros to the other person, and vice versa when it comes to considering where you want to deliver. And so we mentioned this earlier, and that is really one of those pieces of birth prep, is really getting clear on how you feel about all aspects and beginning with your care provider and the place that you're going to deliver. You have to really think through a lot of scenarios and how you feel about each scenario. And I think the feeling process, I mean, we're not necessarily encouraged growing up or taught to continue to lean into our intuition. I think as kids, it's first nature to just, listen to our gut. And that's what being a kid is about. And somewhere along the lines, it kind of gets suppressed or isn't encouraged. And then really in pregnancy and 100% in labor and so much of parenthood even is leaning back into that intuition. And so you have to practice that, and being able to do that in the prenatal space, every little thing, so much about, yes, weighing the pros and cons and learning your options and educating yourself is important, but you cannot discount your intuition, especially at this time where all our senses are heightened. Like, I mean, even more so in labor, but even in pregnancy, that is such a big piece of it. So when it comes to where you want to deliver, there's a lot of reflection that goes into that. And so there's no wrong answer. It's whatever feels best for you in that moment. And that can change during your pregnancy. And I think that's really important to remind people too, is that you are allowed to change your mind. At any point, you're allowed to change your mind, but that even comes down to your care provider. You're 36 weeks and you're like, whoa, I don't like all this pressure I'm getting about being induced at 39 weeks or whatever. You can change your care provider. You can change your birth space. I mean, you can change your mind at any time. And so for me, even in the hospital, I'd say 90% of the time I'm in the hospital. It's just the way it kind of shakes out with clients. And, you know, this could be a whole separate podcast, but people birth in hospitals because that's what insurance really allows people to do. There's a lot of hoops that midwives have to jump through, whether that's hospital-based midwives, home birth, birthing center. It's a thing. And again, a whole other conversation and rabbit hole to go down, but majority of people are birthing in hospitals, and right, wrong, or whatever, that's where I end up being a lot of the time. And I've seen every which way a birth can unfold in a hospital. And that can be really supportive care providers. There's midwives that practice in hospitals here. I think for me, the big difference between midwifery care and typically, this is definitely generalizing, so I want to make sure I preface it with that, but midwifery care versus OB care, when I am working with a client who is delivering with midwives, whether that be hospital, home birth, birthing center, there's a lot less of the fear mongering that I have to prepare them for. And I don't phrase it in that way, but you know, I go through the same education with all of my clients, but when they're with the midwives and I'm kind of running down the list, when it comes to 39 week induction, for example, I don't have to really prepare them for it. I talk about it. We talk about that trial and say, I really kind of just say the midwives likely aren't going to pressure you for that. So unless it's something you want to explore, it's not something you have to worry about too much. That's not the same conversation that I have with my clients who have OB care providers. But I've also been with OBs that are very supportive and hands off for the most part, as far as trying to manipulate how the birth unfolds. So it can go really any which way. I've been at the birth center that there's been transfers to the hospitals for really necessary and appropriate reasons. And that's why they have those safety nets in place. So still a very safe place. I've had been a part of home births where I've been surprised at how maybe the midwives are not as agreeable to some of the requests of the client, just because maybe it falls outside of what normal unmedicated home birth might look like. As far as requiring or requesting intervention, like I want my water broken or I want my gentle induction. So that's the really hard part about birth. And that's what I say to clients. Like, it almost feels like a cop out of my job. I feel kind of like a weatherman where I'm like, it might snow, it might not. And it's like the same is true for so many things in birth, where there's so much gray area that you can ask me one question and I can talk through five different scenarios that are going to have five different outcomes. And that's why having a doula or a support person that's that informed person, that's the constant, can be so beneficial, because you don't know what scenario you're going to have to consider until you're in the scenario. So at the end of the day, birth with who you feel comfortable with and where you feel comfortable with, and know you're allowed to change your mind, and you just got to really lean into your intuition, because that is something in motherhood. Like, mom, you have that intuition for a reason, and it will serve you the more you can lean into it. And it takes practice.
Mic drop. That is so powerful. And it's so funny. I'm like, I'm so pumped to give birth again, because I feel like everything went awry with my son's birth, except, you know, the fact that gratefully he's healthy and all was well with him. But I'm curious, final question for you, what you're excited about or curious about going into a second birth. It has changed for you.
I'm really excited to share a lot of this with just my audience and on my social media, my blog. I just announced last week that we're expecting, and I was chomping at the bit to like share about it. And last time, like I mentioned, I had so much mental struggle around it. It's so different already. And this time, it's almost flip-flopped. Like, I feel like pregnancy is hard. There's definitely some hard parts about it. But I feel generally mentally well and excited. But now I have some fear around birth that I didn't have the first time. And so I plan to work with an energy healer and a Reiki master who does womb healing. And I feel like as a doula, now my unique situation going into a second birth is that since the first time I gave birth, I've supported a lot of births that had tough outcomes, and thank God and luckily everybody and everyone has remained healthy, but just some stuff that sticks with you as being someone who is holding that space and witnessing something traumatic. And so I've had a handful of those since the last time I gave birth, and I want to make sure I'm not bringing that into my own birth space with me this time. And so whereas my first experience was really wrapping my head around and healing around the mental aspect of going into this transition of motherhood, now I really need to put the work on preparing for birth in that way. And so I think that's going to be my main difference as far as really just where I stand mentally and the different, vastly different struggles that I am working through this time versus last time. But it's a really exciting experience this time around because I can enjoy this pregnancy and have the wherewithal to hit the ground running on figuring out some of the mental stuff I know I need to, where last time it was just such a hurdle because I was not in a good mental space. And now I'm like, okay, I can see it clearly. This is what I need to do. Here's who I want to work with. Here I go. And I'm like excited to fix it and work through it. And last time it was just a little different. So I think that's going to be my biggest difference. And I'm eager, anxious maybe to see the difference of how things go this time versus last time, knowing that things were pretty generally smooth last time and knowing that birth can be a million ways. Interested to see how that will go. And then having a toddler in the mix of it, right, is just like another layer that I we'll get to that later. I don't even know what to do with that aspect of it yet.
Yeah, that part I wouldn't know either. A whole other layer for sure. I love hearing all of that. It's inspiring and I think it's helpful. And I love the thoughtfulness that you have kind of in your approach to it. And I love the kind of cutting, it sounds like kind of the womb healing, like cutting any like energetic cords that don't need to be there. I think that's going to make it much more sacred. And I'm so excited to follow along with any and all things that you share about it. I love birth. I love learning about it. I'm excited to do it again someday. And I've learned so much from you today. So thank you for everything. And all the work you're doing. I always ask for people to share, it'll be in the show notes, but vocally where they can find you, where you want to be found, your website, your childhood or childbirth education courses, all of that.
Yeah. So I am most active on social media over on Instagram, and I am at EB Birthing. My website is ebbirthing.com, and there you can find all of the services I have, including this virtual doula services. So whether you're listening in New Hampshire or Indy or anywhere in between, I can support you in your birth. I also have childbirth education membership that has a really beautiful book and guide that goes with it that I wrote that intentionally sets you up for a lot of that reflective piece. So you can mentally and physically feel ready and confident for birth. And you get that with any of my birth services as well. You just automatically get the benefit of the membership. So come follow me because I'm so excited to share about this pregnancy. And I think a lot of things that I'm excited to share about are going to be things that other moms expecting or even in the trying to conceive, it's going to resonate. And I'm really excited for this new chapter to share about it, be transparent about it, and be real about it, because that's a big part of it too. Like, let's just be real about what we're all experiencing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hope that you come say hey, because I'm excited to share about it.
Well, thank you so much. I hope everyone checks it out, and we'll make sure everything is there in the show notes for people. And obviously they can follow you on Instagram too. So thank you so much for everything today.
Thank you.